Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Shut Up and Teach podcast. I'm your host, Elijah Carbajal. As a teacher, I know how important it is to stay informed and inspired, and that's one reason why I started this podcast. On the Shut Up and Teach podcast, we have honest conversations and purposeful reflections on all things educational, with the goal of inspiring you to take action in your classroom. Whether you're a new teacher just starting out or you're a seasoned pro, we've got you covered. If it's educational related, we're going to talk about it. So be sure to hit that like and subscribe button so that you can stay updated when new content is released. Now, it's time to shut up and teach.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
Hello, everybody. It's Elijah here. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Shut Up and Teach podcast. Today, I'm talking with Kim Strobel. Kim Strobel is an educator and innovational speaker, and she is the author of the newly released book, Teach Happy, Small Steps to Big Joy. With her powerful message about the impact of happiness on well-being and the pursuit of fulfillment, Kim travels the globe sharing her insights to schools, businesses, and organizations worldwide. Kim specializes in empowering educators and teachers and professionals, equipping them with the necessary tools and strategies to shift their mindsets, reclaim their happiness, reignite their passion, and lead with purpose. In addition to being an educator, speaker, and author, Kim is also a devoted animal rescuer, having rescued 187 dogs. That's right, 187. She is also an avid runner and has an unwavering love for life. It's very evident in this episode, by the way. We had a lot of fun. We laughed. We just totally enjoyed each other's company and our time together. And I know the same is going to happen with you. So sit back, relax, and let's get to our episode now with Kim Strobel. Welcome back, listeners, and welcome, Kim Strobel. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm good, Elijah. It's sunny and warm here, so that makes my soul kind of happy because we've had some bad days in weather in this area lately.
Oh, man, that's right. Remind us where you're from.
Yeah, so I'm in this little bitty city in southern Indiana called Tell City. So I'm right on the Kentucky border if you hear my accent.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Well, and Kim, I'm just so glad that we were able to connect and, you know, shout out Dave Burgess for kind of, you know, getting us connected with all that. Your book that's out now is through Impress, which is kind of under Dave Burgess Consulting. And I'm excited that we'll definitely talk about that. But I'm going to pass the mic to you now. And I'd love for you to give our listeners a little bit about your educational evolution.
Yeah, of course. So, first of all, I went to college, and at the time, I had been suffering with a debilitating anxiety disorder for a number of years, but we didn't know what it was. And I actually tell the whole story of this in the book, but I had panic disorder, but back in the late 80s, early 90s, this wasn't something that people knew much about. And so I was having these reoccurring episodes where my life went, it became very, very small. And I struggled to do the smallest of things, like, you know, drive my car 5 minutes to Walmart or walk in a grocery store, leave my house. So when I went to college, I was experiencing all of those things, and I quit after a year. It was just felt, you know, I was very ashamed of myself. I wanted to get my college degree, but I wasn't functioning well with what I had going on. And so, you know, my safe place was back home with my parents. And so I moved back and got a secretarial job at the prosecutor's office. But I just wanted that college degree so, so bad. And so about 3 years later, I just forced myself to go back to college. But at the time I was married and I still needed my secretary income. And so I had a really great boss who let me come into work every morning at 4:30 and let me work till about 12 or 12:30 to get my hours in. And I would be in classes till about 11 p.m. And I did that 3 days a week on top of, you know, the entire time I'm driving there, every 5 minutes, I'm feeling like I, you know, need to go to the hospital because I'm having one of these episodes. And so it was one of the most, you know, stressful, intense times of my life. But I was determined to get that teaching degree. And so when I finally got it, I just remember standing in the auditorium and feeling so appreciative that I actually get to do what I felt like I wanted to do in life, which was to teach kids. And so back then, Elijah, we didn't have any teaching jobs. I don't know how old you are, but I'm 50. And so you had to be like on a waiting list for a teaching job. And you start out as a paraprofessional. So did that for a couple years and finally landed my classroom and spent a number of years mostly in fourth grade. And then from there, I became a literacy coordinator because I had a love of literacy, just like you and I spoke about a while ago. And then from there, I ended up becoming a curriculum director, a couple different steps in there. And then in 2016, I decided that I really wanted to empower teachers. And so I started Strobel Education. I have to tell you that my husband always stands behind me and supports almost everything I do, but that about sent him over the edge when I told him that I was launching this new business and giving up my curriculum director's job and steady paycheck every 2 weeks. And so it took him a while to get him on board, but it was just like this super, even when I look back now, Elijah, I felt like I was putting my family's financial stability at risk, potentially not knowing how people were going to find me or hire me. And but it ended up probably being one of the best decisions that I've ever made.
That's awesome. I mean, I love that story. I mean, looking back, like, man, I bet, you know, there's that saying of like, man, if you look back, like your old self would, like, would they be proud of who you are today? And I'm sure, like, looking back, graduating, you know, getting that degree, overcoming all that to where you are now, I'm sure you're just feeling an enormous amount of like success and pride in that. And it's good to feel that. So my hat off to you. And
thank
just congratulations.
You.
Just keep rocking and rolling with this. Let's dive into a little bit about Strobel Education. So with this, you offer a lot of different sources, either like in-person training, there's online courses, all designed, like you said earlier, to empower the educator, right? So I wonder, can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Like, what are some of those, like, what does this look like in action when you provide these supports and services?
Yeah. And I think like for your listeners, as I talk through this, they might be thinking, you know, how in the world did you do this, Kim? Because, you know, you're right, Elijah, in that I have an enormous amount of appreciation because I am someone who's had a lot of trauma and adversity in my life to get through. And so there's not a day that goes by that I'm not appreciative. But sometimes when I speak about all that we have going on, I feel like sometimes people might even think like, how did you do this? Or I don't have this in me, or I want to do this and I don't know how. But, you know, it has taken time and I've really followed what my heart has called me to do. And so when I first started out, I was a one-woman show and I was going in and providing on-site professional development, which we still do. On a multiple topics. You know, one of the topics I'm so passionate about right now is supporting teachers in the science of reading. We do standards-based grading and assessing. We coach schools through that whole process. We do growth mindset, climate and culture, project-based learning. You know, we have about 16 topics that my team goes in now and provides that professional development on. And then within each of those topics, we also have online courses, because what we have found, and I'm sure that you've seen this even with your school district, is, you know, it's hard to even get a professional development day on the books for teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. And
teachers aren't, they can't really take a day off to go to PD anymore, which is sad, but it's like, it's not worth it to them because they have to come back to the abyss of their desk and there's so much planning that has to take place. And so with our online courses, you get access for 9 months to the course. So you can take it step by step. You can implement module one if you want and feel pretty comfortable with that, then come back and watch module two. And then as a teacher myself, one of the things that, you know, I would go to these conferences, this professional development, and I had some really great speakers teaching us some phenomenal things, but I would be so stressed out because I would go back to the kind of abyss of everything that was going on in my classroom. And I would have to search and pull for the additional resource I needed to implement what I had learned. And so as I've created these online courses and even the on-site PD, we created what's called a digital resource bundle, which has mm-hmm. everything you need already for you, ready to go, so that you can actually implement immediately and you're not trying to pull all of that together. So whether it's mini lessons we've created for you, a blueprint, a launch, a framework, activities, anchor charts, kind of all of those things, that was a really important piece. It took a lot of work to create those, but I really just wanted to figure out a way to give teachers the support they needed to make any changes they might be considering, but to be able to do it with more ease. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
So it sounds like this risk you took is kind of paying off. not just for you, but for the people you're impacting.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's so funny. I decided in 2018 that I wanted to be a motivational speaker because of the adversity in my own life. I had really done a deep dive into the self-help world 20 years ago, and I've been on fire with it ever since. And so in 2018, Elijah, I slapped motivational speaker on my website, knowing I had never stood on a stage before. I had, of course, done day-long trainings. And I got my first call. A school of 900 wanted to hire me for their back-to-school keynote. And I remember sitting in the front row of the auditorium that day and thinking to myself, I'm a total imposter. These 900 people have no idea. I've never stepped on a stage and done anything like this. And I'm thinking, why does Kim Strobel always have to push herself to such extremes? But gosh, you know, fast forward, and now what I do mostly is travel around the country, and the girl who had panic disorder, who couldn't even walk to her mailbox without feeling scared, now stands on a stage with 6,000 people and does the number one thing that people are afraid of. So I think, you know, for me personally, my spirituality, I always say God has a funny sense of humor, doesn't he?
That is so great, Kim. And thank you just for sharing your story with our listeners. I can't imagine how many people are going to be impacted by this. So thank you. And so listeners, please go check out Kim's website. We'll shout that out at the end of the episode. You've authored a book. You have a book out, Teach Happy. So tell us a little bit about this. It's called Teach Happy, Small Steps to Big Joy.
Yeah. So I've had an idea for probably maybe 10 years to write a book, but I really didn't believe in myself as a writer. I mean, I don't think writing comes naturally to me. It's something that, you know, I always felt like, oh, there's people who are such better writers than me, but I would work on it a little bit here and there, and then I'd walk away from it. And I'd stay away from the book for like 3 years. And I would tell myself I just didn't have time. Bottom line was, I was simply just not believing in myself to be a writer. But I had this message that I really wanted to get out into the world. And so last January, I was speaking in Orlando. And 2 days later, George Curls calls me up and says, Strobel, enough is enough. Write the darn book. And then a week later, Dave had interviewed me for his podcast, and he said, have you ever thought about writing a book? And so what I learned, Elijah, is if I can speak it, I can write it. And so I started to take what I was speaking about, and I turned those into chapters. And the bottom line is I am not a fluff type person. Yes, I'm a happiness coach, but it doesn't mean that I'm sunshine, sprinkles, and butterflies. What I feel so deeply about is that this is the hardest profession out there right now, and it is the most demanding and the most overwhelming and has the most unrealistic expectations that I've ever seen. And I can't tell you how many times after I speak, I get flooded with people at the front of the room who are in tears because they say to me, Kim, I want to stay in this profession. I know this is what I am meant to do, but I'm drowning and I can't figure out what I'm supposed to do different, but this, I'm losing myself to this profession. And so I started to think about the concepts that I had applied in my own teaching career that I had learned from the field of happiness and well-being and what I've done myself to overcome hard things. And I decided to create a blueprint for teachers that says, look, we might not be able to control this crazy education system. I always say that I have a lot to say to the people in DC about how I think kids learn and how I believe teachers should be treated, but they haven't invited me yet for my input. But what I want to do is I want to focus on what you can change. The only thing we can change, Elijah, is how we operate in this system. That is the only power that we have. So I wrote this book so that teachers and school leaders can actually get their power back in a system that is constantly demanding too much from them. And so each chapter is written with the framework of happiness and well-being in mind. It requires us to take a look inside of ourselves and say, okay, it's up to me to see where I can shift things. And so I'm just going to tell you, I'm hoping that this book lands in every single teacher's hands because they need help. And my heart just does. It really hurts for how much they're putting into the profession and how defeated they're feeling in the other parts of their life.
Yeah. So two things that come to mind with what you're saying there is you said it causes the teacher, like it's going to require the reader to do that deep dive, right?
Yes.
I think that's like, to me, I'm like, that seems like where reflection meets empowerment, right? Like what you're saying and what you're thinking and what you're going through, that whole process allows you to kind of own what you're going through, and then you feel that power sort of thing. That's kind of the message I'm taking or I'm getting from this conversation right now.
Yeah, it is. And I say that this is, you know, hot and messy work because, you know, I'm so sick of people telling teachers to practice self-care. Like that word is so misused. And honestly, Elijah, sometimes I feel like if I have to get up in front of people and be like, you know, take care of yourself and practice self-care, it's like I got, you know, 900 teachers looking at me going, you know what, Kim, I would if I could figure it out. I would. Yeah. Do you think I don't want to, you know, take the time to exercise? Do you think I don't want to have time for my family? And so there's a whole chapter, actually, I think the title of it is, you know, self-care, the self-care that nobody's talking about. And I changed that word, Elijah. The word I'm looking at is radical wellness. That's what it is, because radical wellness is hard. And that means that you and I have to make some tough decisions in our life. For one, we have to learn how to create boundaries. And if you're like me, you know, if you want to see my anxiety level climb high, make me say no to someone or make me create a boundary in my life or, you know, even something as simple as my screen time on my phone. I mean, you know, Elijah, you and I can tout all day long that we don't have time to follow our dreams. We don't have time to write our book. We don't have time to do 30 minutes of exercise. But if you and I right now, and I'm going to tell you, I'd be scared to do this today. If you and I were to go to our settings on our iPhone right now, okay, let's do it. You want to do it, Elijah? Let's do it together.
You know what? Let's do it. Sure.
Okay. So if the listeners are listening, I want them to do this too.
All right,
so I want you to go to the settings app.
We're going to screen time. Is it screen time, right?
Yeah, you're going to go down to screen time, which is about okay. 9 down.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
It's so ugly, Elijah. It's so ugly. And so, like, I'm looking at my phone right now, and it says my daily average of screen time was 4 hours and 47 minutes for the past week. What does yours say?
So mine right now is 3 hours, 13 minutes on average last week. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I mean, then this current week anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. So then when do you see underneath the little graph where it says see all app and website activity?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Then it shows that Kim spent, okay, first of all, it's 12 p.m. So we're not even, I've already spent 35 minutes on Facebook today, 23 minutes on Messenger, 13 minutes on Instagram. Okay. I don't know what your socials look like.
Yeah. Music is actually is the biggest one, but then it starts with social media, you know, Facebook, 13 minutes, X, 11. And then like Gmail messages and stuff are kind of in that same area, like 5-6 minutes.
Yeah. It says. And so, if yeah. we were, yeah. And so, and this is a Saturday, right? And so at the end of the day, if we were to check this, I'm going to guess that most of us have probably spent at least an hour on social media.
I bet.
And that's.
I'd be curious. So listeners, as you checked it here, if you're listening, like send me a message, comment on, you know, either to me or Kim, you know, tag this podcast. We want to know what your screen time is.
Yes, we do. I can't wait to read the comments. And this is not to make any of us feel shame, because one of the things that I love to do in the morning is sit in my chair and scroll my social media. But mm-hmm. the problem is, and this goes back to radical wellness, if I ask people, how many of you, you know, one of the top five happiness habits that's going to elevate, it's going to diminish a lot of your stress response. It's going to elevate your happiness levels. It's going to change your brain to positive more than negative, neutral, or stressed is when I can get you to exercise 30 minutes a day. It is a game changer. But if I ask the crowd, how many of you have time? Nobody has time. But then I say, okay, now we're going to check your screen time. And this is not to be shameful. This is just to show us, and I'm so guilty of it too. This is just to show us that, wow, I'm making daily decisions and I'm choosing an hour and 15 minutes of social media. And I'm also telling myself I don't have 30 minutes to exercise.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's part of the book is making us take a hard look at ourselves. And we don't need to take social media out of our life. I get a lot of pleasure from it, but I've got a problem right now, Elijah, of spending too much time on it, which actually causes depression and other things in our life. And so I didn't know if you know we can do this, but I have set up screen time on my phone so that it notifies me of my screen time each day when I've hit a certain limit.
Oh, see mine notifies me every Sunday. So I've done it on a weekly basis, but it'll tell you, right, you had more screen time this week, like a percentage, right? And that's a good indicator. Like if you go back and think about the week that you had, right, it's that reflective moment of why did my screen time jump, you know, 20% this week, you know, or why did it decrease? Why did it drop that 15%? You know, what is that telling me about how my week went, you know?
Yeah. And you've actually encouraged me just with this conversation, because if you also are in screen time and you go down to app limits, mm-hmm. I don't know if you see that on your screen underneath the graph. There's like downtime and then there's app limits.
Yeah, yeah.
So click on that. And like I chose Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn as the apps I want to monitor. And I chose an hour and 15 minutes every day that I'm allowed to spend on there.
Ooh, I like this. See, okay, so here's the thing. Because you're touching on some things that I'm personally dealing with right now. So I sorry, I'm going to steer this conversation a little
bit. Yeah, go for it.
Just because of where this is going. So back in, was it January, December? I think it was December, around December, during the holiday break, I read Atomic Habits by James Clear. And what you're saying is kind of all connected to that of like, if you really sit down and think about the time that you're spending on whatever it is, right? How much time it could have been spent doing something else, right? And so like for me, it was like my first thing was like when I got up, it was like, let's check email, social media. As soon as I get downstairs, it's like, headphones in and I'm listening to music and I'm on the go, right? And it's like, I was starting to look at that and say, wait a minute, like how much time did I spend on social media in the morning just kind of getting ready and checking emails? Like, I could have, like, what could have been done during that time? And so I've shifted now. So it's like, I don't check social media until I have gotten completely ready downstairs and I've read something, right? I have to have read something, whether it's, you know, I've been reading through the book of Psalms. I've, you know, I'm going through different, just other, like other stories, like I'm reading Stephen King and, you know, listening to, you know, I listened to a great book about Kobe Bryant recently. So it's just something like that. It's like, you have to do this first, right? There's things that have to be in place before you can do whatever it is that you want. So I'm just connecting with this so much because these tools, you're right. Like, how many of us don't know that you can set limits on your apps, right? To maximize time and productivity. I love this. This is a great conversation.
Yeah, and it's like experimental, I'm reducing mine. You know, like now I'm going to take it down to an hour and 10 minutes. But first of all, I love your vulnerability because sometimes we're kind of embarrassed, but it's like literally how many of us, and I was guilty for a while too, I would literally turn over in bed and the first thing I would do is check Facebook or whatever before I even got out of bed. And then like you, I was learning about how I was just turning my brain on so fast to stress that now, you know, I don't check it. I get up, I do my meditation practice. I fix my protein shake. I do my daily gratitudes and then I check it so that I'm not stimulating my brain right away. And then the other thing that you're talking about is we, and that's what the book is too. Like we can't just say, oh, I want to spend less time on social media. You're not going to be successful unless you engineer your environment. Basically, like James Clear talks about, you got to engineer your environment for success. So how are we doing that? Well, we're backing that out and going, okay, first, I'm going to start being aware of the amount of screen time. Mm-hmm. Two, I'm going to set some app limits, right? Oh,
right.
Elijah, did you see those balloons?
I did.
It's been doing this for the last like 6 months. And it's whenever I use like quotation marks, it will...
Really?
Sometimes it springs confetti.
No, mine doesn't. It's your computer. It's not the... Okay.
I love that.
I love that because I know that's probably going to show up on the video.
It is. And like sometimes when I do like a thumbs up, it doesn't catch it every time, but it will do like a thumbs up bubble. And I'm like, I do not know what's going on, but you know, this kind of goes along with my brand of being a happiness coach. So let's just go with it.
I love this. Oh my gosh. This is so great. Like,
I think it's a setting. I think it's somebody said there was a software update and unless you turned that off, but you can turn it on. And I'm so much fun. I'm just leaving it on.
Heck yeah. Wow. That's cool. That was a cool little feature. I'm going to have to see if I have that. Start using that in my videos to celebrate big moments. Cause that was like the perfect time too. I love this. So, I have one more question here, and this is probably another reflective question that you've probably had yourself. You have the word happiness and the word joy in your book title. Was that intentional? Do you see a difference between those two or a connection between those two?
That is such a good question. And you know what's funny is, okay, so I have these big dreams and I envision myself at Oprah's tea hut in the backyard and she's interviewing me for this book. This is my big vision because I think Oprah, she has such a passion for teachers that I want her to know about this book. And I'm so scared that she's going to ask me that question, Elijah. That is because I have studied that there is a difference between happiness and joy. And I don't know what they're exact, like there's so many different definitions and I was scared to put them both on the book because of that. But when I was polling my email list and my Facebook group and I gave them 5 titles, everybody loved that title. So here's what I think of, but I think I could be wrong, but in my mind, happiness, and Arthur Brooks talks about this in his book, Build the Life You Want. And he wrote that with Oprah. But he says, happiness is not like a state of being. It's not like Elijah's finally arrived at happiness and all is well. It's more of a direction that we're heading in, but we're all a mixture of happiness and unhappiness. You know, I can float between happiness and unhappiness multiple times through the day. Like I got up this morning and I had a snafu in a project and I went straight to unhappiness, you know, then I sat down and I did, you know, my gratitude journal. I drank my shake. I had my dog laying on my lap. I went back to happiness. Oh, I feel so happy. Mm-hmm. You know, then things got harried and I had to email you this morning because my life was going wonky and I was worried we were going to have to change the time and my stress level climbed and I went back to unhappiness. You know, now I'm on this with you and I'm having so much fun. I'm back to happiness. And so I think that sometimes we think that happiness is a state of being that we arrive at. And instead, we're all a mixture of happiness and unhappiness. But as Arthur Brooks says, we can all get happier. And in my book, I talk about that, you know, 50% of our happiness, believe it or not, is genetic. So it comes from our mom or dad or a mixture of both. And only 10% of our long-term happiness comes from our external circumstances, which is crazy, right?
That's insightful.
That's 10%. Are you married, single, divorced, or widowed? How much money do you make? What kind of car do you drive? What kind of job do you have? Do you have kids? Do you all of these extra, everything. What childhood were you raised in? Were your parents together? Did you come from a broken home? Did you have money or not? All of these things are external circumstances. And they only account for about 10% of long-term happiness. But if you're like Kim Strobel, you let some people and some experiences steal way more than 10% for far too long, you know? But the book focuses on the fact that that's 40% of the pie that's left and that every human has the ability to increase their happiness levels by up to 40%. And that has to do with our thoughts, actions, and behaviors. And the book focuses on how to work with those three things so that we can elevate our happiness levels. Because when we make happiness a priority in our life, we start to succeed in every other area of our life, but only when we put happiness at the forefront, you know? And so that's happiness to me. Now, for me, I think that joy for me, and some people would say, no, Kim, it's completely flipped. But for me, like, joy are those like intense moments of elation. You can tell Elijah, I'm pretty wound up. I always tell people like I run 40 miles a week. I take an anxiety medicine. I meditate 40 minutes a day and I'm still like really kind of wound up. And I married Mr. Laidback. So one of my favorite things to do at night is I run and all around the house and I chase my dogs and I play hide and seek. And my husband is literally like, you are not allowed to do that until I go to the gym. Like the house is chaos. The dogs are barking. You're stressing me out. And he works out at night. So when he leaves, the dogs and I have our fun. And Elijah, like I'm full of, it's so ridiculous. I'm 50 years old. Well, it's not ridiculous. It's actually a happiness habit of play. But like, I will play with these dogs and I am just like laughing and rolling around on the ground and hiding behind my bedroom curtain from them. And like, I'm just in a state of pure joy. So for me, I guess joy is more like burst of joy and happiness is like a little bit more of a foundation for how you hope to feel in your life. But you obviously fluctuate between the two, but Oprah might tell me, Kim, actually, I think that's completely wrong or backwards. That's just Kim Strobel's explanation of it.
It's a great explanation. And it's very, very poignant what you said about those three things, right? You remind me they were your thoughts, actions.
Your actions and your behaviors.
And your behaviors. Feelings are not mentioned in that, right?
They are not.
It points back to that like reflectiveness of like, you can't just be led by your feelings. You're going to have to do some reflective work and analyze, what am I thinking? How is that affecting my my behaviors, you know, the habits, my actions, and how I interact with people and myself, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I tell people, you know, happiness habits are a daily part of my life. I engage in certain habits every single day. And I believe because of that, you know, and listen, my husband would be the first to tell you, he found me in here in my office laying on the floor crying. Look, see that thumbs up?
Oh, there's a thumbs up. Yeah, there's a thumbs up. Hey.
But, you know, I was having like a meltdown last week and we were behind schedule on something. And I'm like, you know, so, you know, I'm not like, but what I've learned is with my happiness habits, they do control my emotional centers more in that I get out of the gutter quicker than I used to. Yeah.
That's good. That's awesome. I mean, every kind of progress like that, like looking back on your old self and saying, man, look how far I've come. And look how quick I get out of this, you know, these sort of situations and how quick I can bounce back. It's just amazing. So Kim, I mean, this has been such a fantastic, fun conversation. I know my happiness is risen just talking to you as well. So, we're going to wrap up now with the question, that's three-part question at the end. So, Kim, I wonder if you can tell our listeners what you are listening to, what you are watching, and what you are reading.
Oh, I love this question. So I'm going straight to my Libby app, and I am currently, I am obsessed with junkie romance novels right now. And then I'm listening to Robin Carr. She's actually the author of the Virgin River Netflix series. She wrote the books first. And so I'm making my way, and I listen to books when I run. And so I'm making my way through all of her romance novels while I run. That was one of my goals, is I am always reading some type of nonfiction self-help book. And I was listening to them as well. And I thought, you know what? You deserve some more, like, you know, for lack of pleasure reading. And so I'm doing those while I run. And then right now on my nightstand is Hidden Potential by Adam Grant. Have you heard of that book?
I've heard of that book. I have two of his books in my Audible right now. That's not one of them. I have The Originals or Original or something like that. And then is it Think?
Oh, yeah. Think Again.
Think Again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't read those two. This is his latest one. And I started to see people talking about it. And so one of the quotes in there that has really stuck with me, he says, "The true measure of your potential is not the height of the peak you've reached. It's how far you've climbed to get there."
Ooh, I like that.
That's so good, isn't it? My husband and I, we are watching Blacklist because we've been obsessed with that show and Raymond Reddington. Mm-hmm, and so the 10th season just came out and we blew through 10 episodes in the last week. But I must say, we're empty nesters. I probably need to explain that because people are probably thinking, how do you exercise every day, Kim? How do you spend an hour and 10 minutes on social media? How do you want, you know, we're empty nesters now, so we do have more time on our hands.
That's true. Oh, man, thank you so much, Kim, for sharing what you're listening to, watching, and reading. And thank you again for your time on this episode. I wonder, could you leave our listeners with maybe some contacts or ways to find you? What's the easiest way to kind of find all your stuff?
Yeah, if they just go to strobeleducation.com, that's where they're going to see everything that we offer. And then on Instagram, I'm trying to get a lot better with Instagram, Elijah. Sometimes I think that's just what I need. One more social media platform that I need to monitor. But I do enjoy Instagram. And so my handle is at Kim Strobel Joy because someone took Kim Strobel.
Oh, got to make sure you find the right Kim Strobel, people.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for this conversation. It's been a joy to have you on here. So I just cannot wait for our listeners to get your book and to get in contact with you and explore all the wonderful resources you have.
Oh, thank you, Elijah. I'm so happy that you put the time in to get this content out to teachers. I know I used to have a podcast. I don't anymore. And I don't know if people realize what a commitment it is to put out content like you're doing, the time it takes. And so, you know, what you're offering for free to teachers is also quite the service.
Well, thank you. Thank you for recognizing that. I appreciate that. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Please go to Kim's website. Please go pick up her book and share this episode out with others so they can experience the joy and happiness that we had on this episode together. So thank you, everyone. We'll see you on the next show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Shut Up and Teach podcast. I hope that you'll check out previous episodes, and I hope that you'll share this with a friend or a colleague.